Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, their stories, their lessons, put it down in a book and share it with the many, ultimately changing their legacy and destiny in the process. And if you want to write a book out there, check out dreamstarterspublishing.com. They can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you already have a book that's done, you want to generate leads with it to grow that business of yours, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. Now, if you guys listen to this podcast, I talk a lot about financial literacy, wealth, freedom, creation of your dreams. In order for that to happen, I think you need to get out of debt. And maybe you can use debt to grow your business, and taking on business debt, there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. But personal debt, oh my God, it can distract you. It could pull you in directions you don't want to go. It can keep you trapped. And that's why one of the greatest things that ever happened to me was getting out of debt. I felt free. I felt like I was 6 feet tall. I felt I was lighter. It just was amazing. So that's why I'm excited to talk to our next guest, who wrote a book about how to be debt free, a simple plan for paying off debt, car loans, student loan repayment, credit card debt, mortgages, and more. Debt-free living is, and it has a lot of dots, dot, dots in the subtitle. It doesn't show. Debt-free living, let me see here. Mortgages and more. Debt-free living is within your reach. There it is on the book. Okay, so it is an honor to have Avery Breyer with us. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. I'm telling you, I'm in many circles, many multimillionaires. They all say debt is good, right? Debt is great. I think so too, but it's a certain type of debt. Now, when you talk about personal debt, credit card debt, debt that you take on to buy liabilities, insanity. But if it's maybe used to buy assets and maybe in the business name, I think it's a whole different game plan. So what made you want to write this book in the first place?
I think it's because I've just heard of so much pain that people have gotten in when they've taken on too much personal debt, the advertising and the way it makes it seem so easy and so tempting and like such a brilliant idea. But at the same time, there's also these certain people who will act as if all debt is the devil. Yeah. And I don't believe in that, you know, because sometimes you can use debt to make you money. There's good debt and bad debt. It's not all good. It's not all bad. It depends how you use it. It depends what it's for, et cetera. So that's what made me write the book.
I love it. Yeah. And even right now, while we're thinking about growing, there's a possibility of taking on debt to grow the company tenfold. So it just makes sense. And I look at it from a standpoint of, if you're using debt to buy assets and that asset pays you money, it's a whole, you know, different viewpoint than, like you said, taking a credit card and then going to buy that nice shirt or shoe or whatever, you know, to take a trip somewhere. That's different. But let's start off with the gameplay, or give us a quick little background, if you can, on where you come from and maybe what really opened your eyes to this pain that people were in.
Well, a couple of things. I guess when I grew up, my parents kind of drilled into us that whatever house we buy, pay it off in 5 years. And wow, at the time, that's not something that most people talk about. And to be fair, I don't want to come out here and say everyone must do that, because realistically, it depends on your income and what market you live in and so on. There are some places where if you make a high enough income and house prices are reasonable, that paying it off in 5 years in the right time and place is 100% possible. And then you are free for the rest of your life. You're free. You're not paying rent anymore. You've got a roof over your head no matter what happens. That's hugely freeing to know that you don't have to ever worry about where you're going to live. You're never going to have to worry ever about this huge thing that hangs over many people's heads, right? But even if somebody lives in a market where maybe or maybe they don't have a super high income, or maybe home prices aren't as reasonable. Right now, we've got high interest rates, which are sucking compared to what we've had for like the last 20 years. We've had this spike in interest rates, which is hurting a lot of people. So maybe you have to put it off to 15 years even, but that's still better than paying off your mortgage over 30, 40 years, for example. So the main take home is just pay it off as soon as you can, so you have that peace of mind, and so that you're not having all this interest going to the bank, and you're going to be miles ahead if you do that. And then that frees you, that cash that's freed up, you can use for any number of things. You can use it to invest in real estate, which is what we did. You can use equity in the home you own to invest in real estate, which is also what we did, because our first, we bought rental properties with no money down, just because we used equity in our house that we live in in lieu of a down payment, which wouldn't have been possible if we still had this massive mortgage, for example. So yeah, there's many, many benefits. It also, the other reason that I'm a huge fan of that as well is because sometimes crap happens in life. You might have illness, sickness that prevents you from working. That's happened to me at times. If we had a huge mortgage, that would have stressed us the hell out. It was already stressed. We were already stressed when that happened, but it would have been 20 times worse if we had a huge mortgage, for example. So yeah, there's just, to me, it's just a freedom thing. And I just hate seeing people suffering with these huge amounts of credit card debt and all these other things because they just don't have, they're just not sure what to do. They're not sure what kind of basic strategy to put in place to get it under control.
And I think it all starts with maybe the school system or even the family that you grow up in, right? So mm-hmm. if you do not understand the power of money and yep. you get a credit card the moment you turn 18, I still remember going to Duquesne University. It's one of my first days there.
Yeah.
And I remember walking down into the lobby and yep. there was a bank offering me a credit card. I'm like, well, what the hell? Let me take on a credit card. It was day one. So, yep. I mean, it's in the lobby of the school. And I thought to myself, well, it's a bank that I've heard of. I'm very familiar with it. They must be doing something looking out for my best interest. So let me sign up for it. Now, I was pretty damn good with money early on, I will say. And I was a saver. I would never spend. But the mm-hmm. average person doesn't realize the power of that credit card. It could lead to insane debts, but also it could also lead to them taking a job just to pay off that debt. And then they fall into the trap of, well, let me just get this car. Let me get this house. Let me get this lifestyle. And that financial literacy never increases. And therefore, it snowballs and energy always accumulates. And debt is energy. And it's going to accumulate more debt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a trap. I honestly feel it's a trap. And I think that often people will get to a stage where they really don't see how the heck they can ever fix this. They end up going bankrupt. There's a lot of suffering that happens because of a lack of understanding. And the school system, I don't think, does an adequate job of teaching people. It's almost like a path to college or university. It teaches you how to do that. But what about the real life stuff that every single one of us, whether you go into the trades, whether you end up working for Walmart, wherever you end up, there are certain basic skills that every single one of us needs to know. And I don't feel like the school system really does much to teach us that.
Yeah. So the lies that we've been told, can you just, I mean, we probably already jumped on a few, but tell us a few more that you share within your book.
Well, one of them is the whole 30-year mortgage thing. We've kind of touched on that. I think that I always say over and over, I don't believe in one size fits all rules. I hate that because there's always exceptions. There's always people who it's not going to work for, but if possible, a 30-year mortgage, I don't think is the ideal. If you can pay it off faster, do it, because you save a huge amount of money. And I run calculations in my book just to show how massive of a difference it can be. And it's even more so in today's climate now that interest rates have gone up. Another one is sometimes people will say, oh, well, no, don't pay off your mortgage. It's fine because you get an income tax deduction. But if you actually crunch those numbers, you see that the amount of the income tax deduction you get on your interest is still nothing compared to what you save by not paying that interest to the bank in the first place.
Bingo.
So, you know, there's a lot of number crunching that I think people should do just to open their eyes and see so that they're making an informed choice about what these things are actually costing them. Another thing that a lot of people will say is things like, well, no, don't pay off your mortgage. Instead, you should invest in the S&P 500 or buy an index fund or whatever. And that's fine. I understand the argument for that, where people are saying things like, well, if you look at the historical rate of return for investing in XYZ, and you compare that to how much your house is going to go up in value, blah, 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 there's no comparison. You should obviously be investing your money instead. But again, it comes down to security and what happens when the crap hits the fan and your life goes sideways. If you have this huge mortgage, when that happens, that could be the thing that sinks you. Whereas if you didn't have that mortgage, that could be the very thing that keeps you afloat. Mm-hmm. And lets you ride out that tough time because you didn't have to worry about a mortgage payment. And when we're young, in our 20s, in our 30s, we're the healthiest we're ever going to be. We're the least likely to run into these massive problems. So why not seize the day and pay it off while you're young, you're healthy, get rid of that stuff. So then when you're older, if crap happens, you can ride it out and it's not going to sink you and ruin your retirement. Another thing I see a lot is things like buying your furniture, your vacations, your electronics with a loan and just make, you know, however many easy monthly payments and pay it off that way. That's another thing that I think that is best resisted. Nowadays, even with furniture, you can get some amazing stuff off Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, whatever. There was a time when I was quite paranoid about buying used stuff because bed bugs became a thing again. And I was like, oh my gosh, what if, you know, realistically, that is a risk people should, you know, take into account. But nonetheless, if you cannot afford to buy that furniture cash, don't buy it. Just don't, because you're going to, it's going to depreciate in value. The math, it just doesn't add up with the amount you're going to end up paying in interest potentially. And granted, some of these places will give you like an interest-free loan for like a year or whatever. But then if you read the fine print, if you don't actually pay it in a lump in that year, usually there's a decent sized interest rate that's going to hurt you to have to pay that. So that's another little factor there. Car loans, that's another one. A lot of people feel like that's the only way you can buy a car. They don't even consider any other option. Mm-hmm. I go over options in the book, some of the running some numbers on various scenarios, whether it's leasing or buying a used car, et cetera, things like that. So yeah, those are a few of the lies. Let me see what else. I think I covered most of them.
Yeah. So let's just say they didn't take your advice and they got into debt. Now, looking back on my life, I was $300,000 in debt at one point. And, the way I looked at it was I was in a street fight against 10 other people and they were much bigger than me. But I did look at the one that was the most manageable and I took that one out first. Yes. I didn't care about interest rates. I didn't even care about monthly payments. I just said, what has the lowest balance? Let me focus on that. So I go from 10 to 1 down to 9 to 1, down to 8 to 1, down to 7 to 1. And I looked at it as a game. That was my strategy. It took me some years. I'm sure I did some things the wrong way, but that's how I was able to win the fight, if you will. So what would you recommend?
Well, I recommend people run the numbers and see, because the snowball method, there's a snowball method, and then there's a method I like. My preferred method is the one that mathematically works out to paying the least amount of interest possible, because I feel like we all work so freaking hard for our money. It is such a slog sometimes, periods of our life. And so I don't want to give an extra $1,000 to whatever lender if I don't have to. I want that money because I want to spend on things I want, not interest. So my view is that your best, number one, best way to do it, and the math will back this up, is if you go through your debts and you pay off the highest interest ones first. And but you can combine it for some psychological wins, because like what you're talking about, if you take the smallest one, right, it feels good to pay that off.
Oh,
you just
man.
Knocked one off the list. That psychologically feels amazing. So you can still have that, though, even if you use the mathematically optimized method, let's call it. You can still have a little bit of that. You can do it. You can celebrate that you knocked off $1,000 or your first $10,000 or whatever the heck it is. Celebrate those little wins. Build that in. And also, if you have multiple debts, and let's say, I don't know, let's say you've got some credit card debts that are some psycho high, horribly depressing interest rates, and you've got multiples. Well, then if you've got a tie because there's similar interest rates, then just pay off the smallest one first. Sure, do it. Combine those two strategies. So you get those psychological wins, but you also mathematically are going to win and keep the most money possible for you to use on what you want.
I like that. Yeah. So it was a psychological win, in my opinion. I was so strung out with business, trying to grow it and all that. I was just like, all right, how do I simplify this and not worry about anything else? And I think it probably could have been a little bit faster. I probably could have saved money if I did exactly what you did, right? You look at the credit card statement, some of them are 20, 30%. And some of them maybe you're only 10%. I wasn't even looking at that. I was just like, all right, this is a $2,000 credit card. This one's got to go.
Well, and to be fair, I think everybody should just know themselves, at least take a look at the numbers and figure out what it's going to cost you to do it, method A versus method B, and then make an informed decision, you know? And to be fair, if someone feels they need that psychological win, which I totally get, because we all need those sometimes, take it, take the easy win, but then maybe shift gears after that and do some of the more mathematically strategic, you know, aiming for those high interest rates and get rid of those.
What's the power payoff plan?
That's basically what I was talking about, doing it the mathematical way, where you're paying off your highest interest rates first. And then at the end of that chapter, I talk about combining the best of both worlds so that you get those psychological wins kind of built in, so that you can still celebrate that and have that little dopamine hit from, you know, feeling like you're making progress. But mathematically, you're also saving the most interest possible.
And so I guess one of the, first steps, maybe the step that you need to take is get a very clear picture of where you're at. Let's break open the Excel sheet, put it down on an Excel sheet. Let's see where you're at. Maybe see the monthly, see the interest, and then start to have a clear picture of what is the game plan. Is that right? Is that really what you recommend?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
So and I think
good.
I think a lot of people are scared to look at that, right? Because it's intimidating, especially for people that are in a situation where life has just gone sideways for a while and they've got a lot of stuff that they got to deal with. That can be really hard to look at those numbers. But I think if they can find the courage just to really look at it, I think they'll be glad in the long run, because that's what's going to make them the most progress the fastest.
And so then how do you do some type of payment plan? Is it now requiring you to go out and seek additional money, taking side jobs, start to put together a plan, and almost you start to look at everything you're putting in your shelves at your house, you know, how you eat, changing your schedule around, finding the niches in the riches. I guess that's probably the best way to put it, finding these little areas, these little pockets that you could shave off, or maybe things that you're spending your money on, almost putting it together a profit and loss statement per month, and then saying, wow, what can we do to start to find money that we've without even looking for new money, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's basically what I talk about in How to Stop Living Paycheck to Paycheck, because it's basically doing that for yourself. Because what I argue is that every company in the world that's profitable, doing well, they know what their income is, they know what's coming in, they know what's going out. And so if you've got debt you need to pay off, one of the things you should do is do exactly that. You go and you figure out, how much money am I making? What are my expenses? What's possible to even trim? Because odds are you're going to find stuff, right, that you could cut back on. Maybe lentils a little more often, which I realize at the surface that sounds like the most boring meal ever, but there's actually some delicious soups. I'm a fan. But anyways, the bottom line is you can like cut out things. Maybe you eat meat a little less often and save money that way. Maybe you go out for dinner a little less often. Maybe you save money by getting your takeout pizza from Costco for dirt cheap instead of the local pizza place. I mean, I know Costco's not high-end pizza, but it's not bad actually. And it's dirt cheap. So that way you get an easy meal. You got your pizza takeout. You didn't. That kind of stuff can really add up over a year. Looking at your transportation expenses. Are you spending a lot on your car insurance, maintenance, repairs? Maybe you could try public transit. Get rid of one vehicle if you have two. That can save you a bundle. Like, there's so many different things. And granted, for some people, it's not enough to just cut expenses. Fair. So then at least you know for sure that you've done everything you can, and you can look at maybe getting a second job or picking up more hours or picking up a side hustle or something like that.
A couple mentors of mine and great friends, great clients have always said that sometimes downturns are the greatest thing that can happen to you business-wise. And the reason why is because it gives you this reason to dive deep into the numbers and really refine your systems and see what you're spending your money on that might not be producing a great result. So you can clean up a lot of broken procedures, or maybe a lot of fluff. Maybe there's extra fat that you're spending your money on that you can get rid of, and then you can become a leaner, cleaner machine.
Right. And it's a hard process, and nobody wants to suffer with stress and the angst that comes with going through those tough times, those downturns. But for sure, I think if you're stuck in a downturn, if you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, you might as well try to find something good to come out of it. So you come out better, more knowledgeable, further ahead maybe than you would have been otherwise, because you kind of were forced to take a really hard look at your skills and your resources and make the most of them.
And so in the chapter, you how much you should pay towards your debts. Yeah, I guess that's maybe it's a case by case situation, especially if you're how old you are, how many kids you have, if you're married, if you have a house compared to an apartment, your risk tolerance level. What do you go over in this chapter?
I basically go over, I mean, I don't want to misquote myself, but just knowing myself and how I would have put it, it would basically be just figuring out a customized plan for you based on your actual financial situation. Because if I were to come out here and say everybody should put 10% or 20% of their income, whatever, pull some number out of a hat towards their debt, or worse, a number, everyone should put $500 a month or $1,000 a month or whatever towards their debt, that would be garbage, because everybody's in a different situation. So really the only thing anybody can do is, I feel, just take the initiative and look over all your stuff and run those numbers, put some music on, make it a little more enjoyable, go through it, figure out a strategy, and then you can figure out what's realistic. And it may be that what you can pay towards your debt today might be different than what you can pay towards your debt in a year, right? Maybe you get a raise at work and you put that raise towards your debt. Maybe you, I don't know, maybe you switch job and you got a nice leap in pay. Maybe you switch careers. Maybe you picked up a side hustle that took off. So all those things can change. Maybe you had car payments and you made your last car payment 2 months ago, in which case, well, you just freed up a whole bunch of money that you can now use towards your debt.
And so you probably are in this world and see what's going on. There's a trend that's happening. Credit card debt, it just seems to, I think I looked at it maybe a couple years ago when it was $6,000, the average credit card debt. It's probably gone up. I think it's gone up to $8,000 or $9,000, per person. So is there anything that's really scary when it comes to whether it's school loan debt or car loan debt or mortgage debt or credit card debt that is in the wrong direction?
I think it is the rate of interest that to me is the scariest, because depending on how big the amount owing is, that interest can hurt people so bad because it can be a lot of money each month. So to me, it more comes down to the rate of interest. Credit card debt, for example, is notorious for that. But to be fair, the size of the loan matters too, right? Because if you owe $20,000 at 20% interest, but then you also have, I don't know, $500,000 loan at a lower rate, well, then arguably that $500,000 is maybe a little scarier than the $20,000 because the amount of the payment is so much bigger. You know, so in a case like that, I talk about some strategies people can look at too. For example, let's say they bought a house that at the time was totally affordable and reasonable. Now interest rates have shot up and now they're really hurting. Well, maybe consider downsizing, where you're living and seeing if you can cut that mortgage payment down that way. Or maybe you have an extra bedroom, you take in an international student or something to help. You get a nice experience, you meet some cool people, but you also get paid to house an international student, for example. You know, there's different things you can do to address those things and try to ease the difficulty of dealing with those kinds of debts.
So I think I paid off my debt before I started to really, I wouldn't say I did it. I was starting to think about it, but I was free to do so and invest in other businesses and other cash flowing ideas when I was debt free. So maybe I did things backwards. But when it comes to becoming debt free, do you also recommend early on or somewhere in that process to go outside and start looking for additional revenue streams, whether it's a side hustle or an investment or, you know, doing any type of work extra that will bring in more money? So side jobs or anything, is that part of the process? And I'm assuming that is a part of maybe how to stop living paycheck to paycheck. Maybe it's in both books. So anything you can say about that?
Yeah, I think I'm the queen of backup plans. That's what I tell everybody. I have a plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. If this goes wrong, then I'll do this. If that doesn't work, I'll do this. And I love backup plans. And side hustles for sure can be a wonderful backup plan. And depending on what career stream someone is in, you know, some careers are the type of thing where the future looks great. It looks like you're never going to be out of work. You can see zero reason why there would ever be an issue. There's lots of hours. Somebody in that situation, maybe they don't need to look at a side hustle per se, because maybe they can just pick up more hours at their existing job or, you know, something like that. But for some people, their career track is not as stable or secure and feels a little more teetery, you know, a little more, a little less solid. So especially if someone's in that situation, I think a side hustle, picking up some extra skills on the side can be a huge help, because that can bring in significant money, whether it's just for frivolous things. Like I started a travel site that paid for our vacations for like years, and that was amazing. It was just affiliate commissions paying for that, and that was great. It was a ton of work setting up that site, but I learned a lot of skills that I even use today with one of my main freelancing clients, for example. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of side hustles. I think that can be a great, great option.
Yeah. So multiple revenue streams by far, right? Gives you options, gives you freedom, and you're able to clear those debts. So you've worked with people that were able to clear their debts. Tell us a little bit about like what people have gone through, whether it's the self-doubt or not being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, or the moment that they actually are able to go debt-free, how they have lived their life ever since then. Any cool stories? Because I'm assuming you've seen the entire spectrum.
Well, you know, I have never done actually one-on-one coaching with anybody for debt stuff. Part of that is because I'm not a financial planner and I don't want to get into a situation where I'm telling people what to do with their money, because you need a license to tell people what to do with their money. You know what I mean? You can write in a book what your strategies are and write a blog, write on your blog or whatever you want. You can do that.
But you're not licensed by the state then, which is smart.
Right. And I don't want to get into that situation where... I want to help people with, by staying in my lane, with staying what I know. I'm good at budgeting. I'm good at spreadsheets. I'm good at mathematical strategizing for how to optimize things. But I don't want to get into telling one specific person, do this. I don't know. I've steered away from that because I just didn't want to wade into those waters.
I was reading through your testimonials, and just people are able to grasp a lot of concepts, and it seems like it's helping a lot of people. So I'm assuming you've at least heard many stories that just, you know, it's really inspiring to see how people are starting to maybe live the dream life after they go debt free. There's probably some type of connection there. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do get, whether it's emails or whatever from readers, that's usually where my testimonials come from. Somebody will send me an email out of the blue and I'll be like, oh, wow, that's so cool that you said that. And I'm so glad. Could I use that on my website? You know? So that's usually how that happens. Actually, that's always how that happens. Cause I don't think I've ever once actually said to somebody, could you give me a testimonial? They come in and I ask if I can use it. But yeah, my focus has definitely been more on empowering people to fix their own situation without needing to depend on somebody else to tell them what to do. Because honestly, I do believe that everybody can do it, because the math that's involved, it's the math they learned back when they were 12. You know what I mean? It is not complicated math. And for the stuff that is a tad bit more, there's calculators online that anybody can use. So I feel like there's a lot of value in people learning the skills and learning how to think about these things so that they can feel confident making strategies for themselves that will work and will be more customized. And I think more fitting for them than anything anybody else could tell them to do.
Have you ever read the book Profit First by Mike McCallum?
No, I have not.
So he talks a little bit about how you have different buckets and, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Different, there you go. Different buckets. When it comes to, if you make money and it goes into your bank account, you automatically take that money and put it into multiple buckets. And therefore, you can't touch one, but one's profit, one's your charity, one's your taxes, and the list goes on and on. And so that creates some type of discipline that allows you to say, well, not all money is created equal. This money goes here, but I have to think about only what I can spend in here. And that's the only bucket I focus on. Do you teach anything like that when it comes to when you make money? Have a certain discipline, whether it's daily or weekly, that certain money goes to a certain bucket and you can't look at it or touch it for a while or until you pay something, right?
Yeah, no, 1,000,000%. In my book, How to Stop Living to Paycheck to Paycheck, I have a money tracker that I share with readers of that book that they can download for free with that book. And part of that process is there's a section on there where you're setting aside money each month for things that you know you're going to spend. So for example, maybe your house insurance comes up once a year and it's $5,000, or maybe it's $3,000, maybe it's $8,000. I don't know. It depends on how big your house is and how expensive insurance is. But you know that comes up every single year. That can hurt if you get hit with that out of the blue in January, right after Christmas. And, you know, life gets busy. You might not have been thinking about all that all year. But if you're setting aside, you divide that number by 12 and set aside that money in a savings account every single month, then when that big bill comes due, it's easy. It's no stress. Ditto for Christmas, birthday presents, car insurance, car repairs. Even though you could say that's a surprise, you don't expect your car to break down. But to be fair, you can kind of estimate, well, I probably should set it. In a year, I would expect on average to spend X on car repairs, or I know every few years a big repair is likely to hit me. So you take that estimate, divide it up by 12, and you set that aside each month. And so the money tracker will track how much you have in each little sub account. It's only on paper, but that way, when you look at your savings account and you see there's $8,000 in there, for example, you know maybe that $6,500 of that is not yours to touch. That's like, stay away from that, because that's set aside for something. And it'll tell you, you might, maybe only 1,500 of that is money that's legitimately left over that you can use on whatever you please. New TV, new landscaping, new couch, whatever. You know, so that way you are planning for those things. It sounds very similar to the strategy you described from that profit first book, except I guess it's insurance first, car repair first, home repair first, etc. You know?
Yeah. And I guess one of my strategies, this is probably part of debt-free, but also paycheck to paycheck. I downsized. I sold my house in 2020 whenever I can't believe I got to certain the level of money that I did for that house. But people were buying then. So I reaped the rewards and I downsized to an apartment. And and maybe I will say the monthly is probably the same, right? Mm-hmm. However, I know that it's a set amount. Even my water bill and my you know, my sewage, all the exact same. So I was able to budget better. And the fact there's no repairs. Hey, if my dishwasher goes, I don't need to spend money on it. I don't need to have the repair guy. It's all taken care of. So that is something that I recommend. I recommend, and now this is not for everybody. It depends on where you're at, but basically rent where you live and own what makes you money. So you can rent where you live and then buy assets that produce cash flow. And then you own real estate. So what do you recommend? Is there any type of game plan that maybe doesn't fit everyone, but something that you hold close to your heart like that?
Well, you can probably guess what I'll say. I'm a huge fan of, it could be part of it psychological. I like the security of knowing I own where I live. So no one can take that from me ever. It's mine. I own it, period. Yeah, there's taxes I got to pay. So technically, if you don't pay your taxes, I guess you could lose it. But taxes are a puny, puny amount of money compared to a rent payment or a mortgage payment, whatever. I think I'm not against renting in any circumstances, for sure. There is a time for everybody, I think, where for most people, unless they, I don't know, have a trust fund from the age of 18. But I think for most of us, renting is going to come into play at some times in our life. It might be because we're, like you said, your home value went up so much, you were like, I'm going to take this money. Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, fair. Other people, I know we rented for a couple of years because we were saving up for a down payment. So that was why we did it. There could be people are transferred to a certain place for their work and they need maybe the real estate market there. It might be a little risky if they're just going to be there 5 years to buy something, because who the heck knows what's going to happen to house prices. They could lose their shirt if they have to sell it in 5 years and prices crashed. For me, I would say my biggest thing is tracking your money so that you know what you have. Make all your decisions strategically based on the math, not blindly. Like don't just kind of do something because you heard it was not you, but just people in general, not to just do something because you heard it was a good idea and just trust that it is. Like, actually run the numbers for your own situation so that you can take an honest appraisal of what it's costing you to do that thing and what you're gaining by doing that thing. So whether your choice is to rent for a while or your choice is to own your own home, just make sure you know what it's costing you and what you're gaining.
Yeah.
So that at least you're not going to be caught off guard.
Got it. And so people that you have you spoken at events or any type of seminars or anything? I would just think that many people ask you the same type of questions. I don't know if there's any type of common trend that people really struggle with when it comes to getting out of debt. What is it? Is it more psychologically? Is it the fact they don't want to live below their means? What is the main reason?
I think that the biggest thing is often an income problem or an expense problem. It's always one of those two things. People either don't earn enough income to support their lifestyle, or they have too many expenses. And again, it comes back to an income problem. You know, like, it always comes back down to those numbers. So I would say that's the biggest thing. And I think that there's a lot of pressure in society today too, and probably always has been, realistically, to keep up with other people and to look like you're doing okay. And that's really hard, right? Because you, depending on your friend group, your coworkers, how they seem to, even family, you know, there can be a lot of pressure to put on a certain image in terms of the clothes you wear, the car you drive, the house you live in, the neighborhood you live in, etc. You know, like, that can be a lot of pressure, I think. And I think that gets a lot of people often. And then there's things beyond their control that just hit them like a truck and they just didn't see it coming. And it really sets them back. And now they're trying to figure out, well, how do I recover from this?
So do you also talk to people in the book about how important it is, like you said, to know yourself, self-awareness, self-actualization? Because I will tell you that I'm in certain circles where many people are wearing the Rolexes and, you know, they're driving the Ferraris and Lamborghinis. And I'm all for the toys. I loved cars and I have a bunch of dirt bikes and all that. But to me, I see certain things that they're buying that I would never want to buy. But there are people out there that say, well, if I want to really fit in with that crowd, I need to buy the really expensive watch. So like, for example, I have a Casio G-Shock. I love it. I wear it around. There are people who are multimillionaires, potentially billionaires that I hang with. They're like, you should really get a nice watch because, you know, most people take you more seriously that way. I'm like, I have a nice watch. It's a $450 watch. And I don't wear it because I don't even care about it, right? It's just a nicer watch that if I go out to dinner, I'll put it on. But to me, doesn't matter. I do see people who, and it doesn't have to be watches, but it, like you said, it could be a car. It could be a certain lifestyle, restaurants. It could be clothing. So is that another piece of it? Is that individuals technically don't know themselves. They want to fit in. Therefore, they live above their means. And it ultimately is their downfall.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we're kind of evolved to fit in. Like I've read articles in that with the argument that during our evolution, it was kind of important to our survival to fit in, right? Because if we didn't fit in, we were like othered, and you needed your tribe to survive. So we probably evolved to need that, but now it's kind of biting us in the butt, because in modern society, technically you kind of almost could survive on your own in a way, as long as you have money to pay for the things you need to survive, but you don't need to depend on so-and-so to get you the food and so-and-so to make the clothes and so-and-so to build you can just pay people to do things. It doesn't depend on your relationships and whether they like you or whether they think you're one of them, right? In a way. So I think could be maybe the way our brains evolved to want to fit in is sometimes our downfall in modern society, right? Because it's very easy to spend money on the wrong things or feel pressure to, and then you kick yourself later and think, oh, why'd I do that? You know,
if somebody's listening to this and they're like, yeah, that doesn't bother me. I can handle it. And it has to do with how much you can handle. What do you say to them about how important it is and what it's like to be debt free? I just think that the moment you're debt free, you have options, but also you're not dependent on that job anymore. You really could create a hobby. You can sleep better at night. I think, you know, Tony Robbins has the great quote, your quality of life is based off of two things, quality of your relationships, quality of your thoughts. I would add one more, and that's the quality of your sleep. And if you sleep if you sleep well, there's, you can't buy that. I don't know what it is, but you just can't buy that. And I will say, for the first year, whenever I was debt free, I didn't want to even like take these big risks with business, because I was like, all right, I'm debt free. I feel really good. Now I can't stay there because that's a comfort zone. You know, comfort zone is not good, but my God, did it feel freeing. So what would you say to people who are out there listening and saying, I can handle debt, it's not a big problem? What do you say?
I say you're going to love how you feel when you get rid of it, because it's peace. It's freaking inner peace. It really is. It really is. When you can look at your own personal balance sheet, what assets you have versus what you owe, and it's positive, or better still, you could sell everything and have a nice chunk of cash. Psychologically, knowing you have a safety net to catch you if you ever need it, that's priceless. It honestly is. So I would say, you know, I'm a fan of using debt for certain things. I use it to invest in real estate, but you can bet I always keep an eye on my balance sheet to know, what are those properties worth? What are my mortgages? If I sold everything tomorrow, what would I have? How much of a cushion? If everything fell in value by 50% because a calamity happened, where would I be? If interest rates doubled, where would I be? You know, I'm always running those numbers. But I think if people took the time, more people took the time to, and for sometimes it's, I don't mean this in a judgy way, like you should take the time or else, you know, not like that, but more, but if people could find the motivation, the courage in some instances, depending on their circumstances, to look at that situation and take a hard look at it, come up with a plan to get rid of any of their bad debts, I think they would be extremely pleased with the outcome in the end. It could take a while. It takes some patience, but once they're through it on the other side, it's priceless.
Damn right. Last question I have is, I mean, society's built off of debt, right? If you go back to how the Federal Reserve was created, this is perpetual debt, the gold standard being removed in 1971. You're talking about perpetual debt. We are built to use debt. It's part of, I guess, world culture, but American culture for sure. So, you know, when you look at that, it's in your best interest to understand, to be out of it, but to really understand even the origins and how it's used and how the wealthy use it. Like you said, you're in real estate. Has that been taught to you by your parents? Was there a book that you read, like Rich Dad Poor Dad is the one that set me free, and that's why I
love
keep
that
it behind
book.
Me? Is there anything that you know, you came across that really showed you, okay, this is the mindset that you need? Wealthy do, you know, leverage it quite a bit. But was there anything that came into your life that you're like, well, this is the moment that I have to live this way?
Yeah. For me, real estate was the path we chose because it required the least of our own money. And when we looked at the amount of our own money that we would have to put into it and what the rate of return is over the long term, not looking like 5 years ahead, I mean like 20, 30 year timeframes, you can't beat that anywhere.
Right.
Anywhere at all. And for us, just because of various factors, I have crazy eye issues that have caused me a lot of difficulty with work and things like that over the years. I wanted to stay home with my kids. So that would involve working part-time, which means a huge pay cut compared to when I worked full-time before having kids. So if I wanted all of those things and I wanted a retirement of a certain financial standard, because I didn't want to have to struggle, real estate was the only way to do it. And so everything we've done from the time we got married to now has been with that in mind. But when you run the numbers, there's nothing like it. But there's definitely pros and cons. I wouldn't say real estate's for everybody, but it's very, very good. It can be very, very good if you run it right. And some people think you have to have like a huge apartment block or whatever. And for some people, that's what they want. But you can do it with less intimidating things too, like single family homes, condos, et cetera, and manage it yourself. And that way it's a less complicated system and you just bide your time over 20, 30 years and then you get the nice payoff, you know? So it can be a good thing. We once went to a bank the last time for the last property we bought. We went to the bank to get a mortgage on it. And it was interesting because the loans officer, they were like, I guess because my husband and I, we look like we're 12 or something. And so we like go in there looking like whatever. I guess they had in their head we should be like 65 or something to be doing this, you know? And so we go in there looking like we're 12 and we're like, yeah, here we are for a mortgage. Hi. And she's like, she said to us, she said, every wealthy person she's ever met did it through real estate. And it's interesting because granted, she's a banker and she does mortgages. So, I mean, I'm not saying, obviously, you can make a lot of money in business too. But I just thought that was interesting though, because at the time that it felt good to hear that because I was like, okay, good. The math works out. I've run the numbers like a million times. It should, in theory, work out under almost any circumstance that could possibly happen in the next 30 years. But it was reassuring to hear that for sure.
Wow. Man, you have hundreds of reviews on Amazon and you have multiple books. Seems like you put all these out right around the same time, 2015, 2016. So guys, look at her books. One is How to Be Debt Free. The other one is How to Stop Living Paycheck to Paycheck. And the other one, we didn't even get into this, How to Raise Your Credit Score.
Yeah.
My God, there's such a strategy behind that. I've been around some people who know some games and it is a game, right? I mean, it is the system's put in place and it's all a game. So
if you know the rules, you can play the game.
Damn right. Whether it's wealth creation, or when it comes to getting, you know, becoming valuable in regards to taking on debt, right? Using other 100%. People's money. And credit score is absolutely important because it does give you options down the road. So guys, look at her book. Is there a website or anything that people can find you on, get in touch with you?
Yes, averybreyer.com has everything. So that's the hub.
That's easy to find. averybreyer.com, and that is B-R-E-Y-E-R. Look her up.
You got it.
Avery, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life right on.